Hey there, Make Your Way listeners. Katie here, and I'm excited to share that Make Your Way is moving over to its own podcast RSS feed. To keep following the show, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search Make Your Way to subscribe. During the migration, you'll still see Make Your Way on the current feed where you're listening now, but after this season, you'll need to subscribe to the new feed to get all the latest episodes. We hope to see you over there. Listening to Make Your Way, Season 5, Episode 5. Welcome to Make Your Way, where we explore what it means to work and create on your own terms. Along with every episode, we post show notes with links to resources mentioned in the episode and a full transcript. You can find these materials at katielinder.work/podcasts.
Hey, Katie.
Hello, Sarah. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm really excited about today's topic because we got actually a question from a listener, and it Yay! Relates to today's topic. So tell us what we're talking about.
Yeah, so today we are going to be talking a little bit about this idea of in-person marketing. So think about things like conferences and talking about your work with other people who are kind of in your spheres, that face-to-face conversation kind of stuff, the direct selling, those sorts of things. And as you mentioned, Katie, we got a question from a listener. Angela wrote to us, and she said, quote, "When you and Sarah were talking about the feelings of fear or the icky around marketing, it also got me thinking that I sometimes feel the same way about marketing myself in networking or interviewing situations. Sometimes I've had the fear of being judged if I try to note an accomplishment I've had, or I've had the icky feeling of possibly talking too much or bragging about myself." Oh, Angela, you are speaking my language. This is so, so real. And especially coming from an academic perspective, I've definitely been to those conferences where like networking is what you're supposed to be doing. And you're like, what does that even mean? And how do I do it? And how do I talk to somebody about my work without sounding like an idiot or without sounding like I'm bragging? So, Katie, I'll turn that question to you. How do you talk to somebody about your work?
Well, okay, before we get there, actually, I want to break this down into the places where we're doing this. Because I think that might be different for you and for me. And Angela specifically brings up kind of job situations or conferences or things. Mm-hmm. So can I actually pause the question you just asked me and ask instead, where are you doing in-person marketing? Like, what is this? What counts as right. in-person? Is it literally you're in the same physical space as someone, or is it just like you are synchronously talking with them via Zoom? Like, what does it mean to do in-person marketing to you?
Yeah, for me, I think it means all of the above a little bit. It's really anything where I'm having a one-on-one, or even I would say small group, like sometimes you're standing around a networking hour and you're talking to a group of two or three people. But anytime that you're sort of having that personal connection kind of conversation, I've definitely had the sort of informational interviews with people over Skype or over Zoom before, and I would definitely include those in this. Usually for me, those are more like students and other people asking me questions about how did I get where I am, or about podcasting or video making or that sort of thing. So it's a little less me trying to sell something or talk about my work in that way. But for me, it's those informational interviews, those one-on-one coffee hours, or it's the events at conferences where you're kind of like supposed to be floating around and talking to people and getting to know people. And I feel like those are different experiences. For me as an introvert, I much prefer the one-on-one coffee with somebody. Like, I will happily meet somebody for coffee and talk for like 2 hours about the stuff that we're, you know, interested in. But the idea of going to a networking hour and like walking up to a group of people and being like, "Hello, I am Sarah Langworthy." Like, no, the worst thing ever. I hate it. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about. What areas are you thinking about, Katie?
Okay, so definitely conferences, because I actually travel quite a bit to conferences for my day job, but it results in people knowing me from other things. So people will approach me or ask me a question about my side business, which is a little awkward, to be honest. And we covered this way back in season one, I think, when we talked about wearing multiple hats. So I definitely think conferences is one place. I also do like exploratory coaching calls with people where I am literally direct selling to them and explaining to them about like what coaching is and seeing if we're a fit. So I consider that to be in-person marketing. And then I would also this is why I asked this question a little bit, is I wonder, because I do, part of me thinks podcasting might kind of be like this, but it's asynchronous and it's, but it's literally me connecting with someone on kind of a one-on-one basis where I am telling them about a product or service in some cases because I'm giving them an ad or something. I don't think about that as the same thing, but I don't know. I would kind of wonder if it kind of counts for this because I am putting myself out there as, you know, doing something and it is kind of that one-on-one connection, like you said. But I definitely think based on Angela's question, this for me is more about conferences and probably those more like exploratory calls where someone reaches out and says, I'm not sure if I need this or not. Can we talk about it? And then we do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I think that's kind of more what this question made me think about is that more direct approach, kind of one-on-one conversational approach. For me, podcasts and videos and that sort of thing actually kind of fits more into speaking, right? Because mm-hmm. you're talking about a particular topic or something, and then you might drop in some things or resources or other things that you've done that are relevant to it. So that to me feels a little different. But in terms of some of this...
It's not so off the cuff. Like, that's right. The other thing. It's like you can kind of plan that. Whereas in these situations, if someone like walks up to you and asks a question, in the moment, you're like, okay, how am I going to respond to this? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, Katie, I'll turn it back to that first question I started off with, which is like, how do you do this?
Okay. So I want to offer a little bit of a context that I think this has gotten a lot easier for me because I represent a brand that's not myself when I'm at a lot of these conferences. Mm-hmm. And I'm expected to talk about my work in the research unit that I direct. I'm expected to talk about our kind of quote unquote products that we create. We create a lot of free resources. Like we have a database, we have a checklist that we recently released. We have reports that we put out. So I was just at a conference this last week for my job where I was presenting on one of our research studies. And I give out podcast swag. I give out, you know, information about Research in Action, which is the podcast I have for that. And then also I have little handouts of other products and things that we have. So I feel like this has gotten a little bit easier for me because it's part of what I do anyway. Like this is mm-hmm. part of what I'm supposed to do is represent our research unit and the work that we're doing for Oregon State eCampus. Now, that is not to say it has made it completely easy for me to do this with my other work, but I would say that the exploratory calls for me have become way easier because I do not feel the pressure to, quote unquote, close the deal mm-hmm. In the way of, you know, if somebody decides I'm not for them, and this has totally happened to me, like I have taken them through my products and services. And I have learned what their goals are. And I have either said, I think you should do something else based on what you're describing to me. Or I know they're interviewing other coaches to see who's going to be a fit. And they either pick another route or they pick another coach. Like, I am not always someone's choice. And mm-hmm. because I don't feel pressure around that, it's totally fine with me. Like, coaching is a really personal thing. If it is not a fit for you right now, for whatever reason, I don't want you to coach with me. Like, mm-hmm. it will make it not a good experience for either one of us. So I think that those exploratory calls, because I've taken the pressure off myself, that it's not about them saying yes, it's about me helping them find the best solution. That makes it way easier. Mm-hmm. And I think that you could also approach a face-to-face thing as well with that. The challenge that I find is when somebody asks a question in a setting and I know I could help them with a service or product I offer, the challenge is bringing it up in a way that's not like vendory, because mm-hmm. I am in a lot of vendor contexts and I know mm-hmm. that it can be kind of smarmy and weird. But if someone literally says, I wish I knew more executive coaches or whatever, and I'm like, you know, raising my hand and kind of, you know, waving from the corner. I mean, it's just, that's awkward for me is if, mm-hmm. because in a lot of spaces, and this is not going to come out sounding great, but like I am known in a lot of spaces, like, mm-hmm. like I have some recognition in my field. And so mm-hmm. when I go to a conference, a lot of people know who I am. So when I'm in a situation where they don't, and I have to like explain what I do, it's a little more awkward, partly because I do a lot of things. But I find it a lot easier if you have brand recognition and then you can kind of slide in on that, and other people will then introduce you, or mm-hmm. other people will say, oh, you know, do you know Katie? She does that work. Mm-hmm. And then you're not having to do it yourself. So I think that that's actually a really good argument for building your brand, because then you kind of, your brand comes before you. It's like a little red carpet that gets rolled mm-hmm. out, and you don't have to do all mm-hmm. this work in the moment. But what are your thoughts on this, Sarah?
Yeah, it's interesting, because hearing you talk, I'm realizing that, again, we're at a place in our careers and in our building our businesses where we're having more and more like people recognizing us versus us trying to sell or like us presenting the information. So it's a little different, I think, than when we first started out. I'll speak from my experience that when you first start out in this, you know, you don't have a lot of that recognition. You haven't done a lot of this work yet. And so it can feel a little awkward, because, you know, especially in things like speaking and that sort of thing, if you don't have a lot of examples of things like conferences you've been to before or things you've talked about before, it can feel weird to be like, oh yeah, I do speaking and trainings on that topic. I mean, I've done it that one time and it went pretty well, I think. You totally want to hire me, right? Like, that's how it can feel internally. And so I think, you know, as you get more seasoned and as you get more experience, it's much easier now for me to be like, oh yeah, no, I do presentations on that topic. And that's, you know, it's really interesting to hear about your work in XYZ, right? You can slip it in a little bit more casually and in a way that doesn't feel quite so like imposter syndrome-y and a little bit like either that you're bragging or that you're like exerting yourself in a way that you shouldn't be, or that you feel like you're not ready for. So I think some of that just comes with a little bit of experience, but I've had that, that thing that you're talking about, Katie, where like somebody will be talking about a thing like, oh, I really wish that blah, blah, blah existed. And you're like, hi, me in the corner. Like, and it's always a little strange, because you're like, it's hard to be the person to bring that up about yourself. It's much easier if you're there with colleagues who can, like you said, Katie, can turn to you and be like, hey, did you know that Sarah does this stuff? And yeah. Let me introduce you, and those sorts of things. So, I think that that speaks to the necessity of like building your networks of supportive colleagues who are willing to kind of, you know, make those connections and say those things, and to reciprocate that and do the same for your other peers and colleagues as well. And yeah, I think it's just part of it is the progress you make in your business throughout the development of it and kind of where you land. And where we are at this point in our careers, like you said, there's a little bit more recognition in certain circles than in others. But yeah, it's hard. And especially when you think about like the elevator speech thing. Oh, I hate the elevator speech.
Well, it's really, I think the elevator speech is especially hard for multi-potentialites, because uh-huh. people are like, what do you do? And I'm like, I do 18 different things. Which one right. would you like to know about?
Right.
And I do think that one... So I want to touch on a couple things you said. One was having colleagues help you to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask for that.
Yes.
Like you don't have to wait for it to happen. And I've actually traded this service with several people I know, especially on listservs where you're not mm-hmm. supposed to sell your work. Colleagues will sell it on my behalf because yeah. they know that I can't do it myself. And mm-hmm. they will mention my book, or they'll mention mm-hmm. something, you know, that will be relevant when someone actually asks a question that it's a fit for. Mm-hmm. And so that's something I think that's something to consider is actually finding people in your area that are not direct competitors, you know, of what you're doing, but that would be a good fit to kind of share about your work. The other thing I would say too is I feel like in those situations when something comes up and it feels kind of awkward to share, you know, that you have something you've done in this area, you can't really lose with enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, if you start, you know, if somebody says, for example, I don't know what's a good example here. Like, let's go back to the executive coach example. Like, I've been looking for an executive coach. And, I mean, I could basically say something like, you know, that is so interesting because I got really interested in executive coaching a couple of years back. And based on, you know, my background as a faculty developer, and I ended up going through training to be an executive coach, and I had no idea that the executive coaching industry was such a growth area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's a way of like giving information that mm-hmm. might elicit additional questions,
mm-hmm.
but it's also saying like you have a shared interest in right. something, and you're not saying, oh, well, I'm an executive coach. Would you like to hire me?
Right.
Or would you like to discuss possibly using my services? Like it's yeah. not direct like that. It's more of just treating people like people mm-hmm. and saying like, oh, we have a shared interest here. Mm-hmm. And it's the same. This comes up a lot with podcasting because you can imagine podcasting comes up in general conversation all the time because people mm-hmm. are listening to a show or whatever. And I don't insert, oh, I'm a podcaster. Yeah. Every time that somebody brings up podcasting,
right,
I'll just right. say, oh, here's a show I've really been enjoying. And if it does come up in some other capacity or somebody mentions that I have a show or whatever, mm-hmm. fine. But the purpose of that conversation is not to share that you have a podcast. Right. It's to share that you listen to podcasts and that you mm-hmm. also have shows that are interesting. Mm-hmm. And maybe it will come around to the idea that you have a show too or whatever. But I think about, for example, at this conference I was just at, there were these options of meeting one-on-one with people. And somebody threw out the topic of wanting to meet one-on-one about what they were reading. And I was like, I'll sign up for that. Like, mm-hmm. I always want to know what people are reading. I didn't go to that and say, so before we talk about what we're reading, I happen to be an author. So maybe we should, you know, like, I'm an expert yeah. in this area because I've written books. Like, you don't do that. Like, yeah. sometimes it's just about connecting on a human level, leaving the other stuff behind. So the other thing I want to add about that, though, that I think gets back to the selling is, so let's say you make a human connection and you exchange business cards or whatever. Then you can follow up with an email saying, you know, our conversation got me thinking and I thought maybe you'd want to know that I also happen to do this thing. Mm-hmm. And here's maybe a couple of resources based on my experience that could help with your issue or problem. Like, for example, when people find out I'm an executive coach, I will also often send them the link to the International Coach Federation directory where you can find coaches. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, here's my website for coaching, but here's the ICF directory in case you want to look and see what coaches, you know, like the range of what they charge or, you know, like the different kinds of coaches that are out there. If you just want to learn about coaching as a field, here's a resource. So I feel like there are ways that, you know, you don't have to have that desperation of, oh my God, if I don't give them this information right now, they're never going to hear it. Mm-hmm. If you build the relationship, they're going to eventually figure out who you are and what you do.
Right, right. Yeah, agreed.
It's a long game, people.
It is a long game. And I think sometimes we forget that, especially when you go to conferences and you go to the marketing, or not the marketing, the networking hour. You know, there's always some sort of like open networking session. For whatever reason, calling it that, like, totally shifts the mindset for a lot of people, and myself included. And that feels much more high pressure. It feels much more like, you know, I have to be, you know, I have to put my best foot forward and I have to have my elevator speech completely ready to go. And I'm only going to have 2 minutes with this person. And if I don't convince them in that time, they're going to run away. Like, for whatever reason, that term networking has this like loaded message with it sometimes. And so I just have to remind myself when I walk into those situations that, like, I'm here to maybe meet some people and have some conversations. If I meet somebody cool, great. If I don't, like, no skin off my back. Like, it's fine. Like, I will live to see another day. But, you know, seeing it more as an opportunity to get to know interesting people doing interesting things, as opposed to, oh my gosh, I have to meet as many people as possible in as short amount of time as possible and figure out their value and worth to me and my value and worth to them, right? Like, taking it down a notch is really helpful. One of the other things that I think, Katie, you've had this happen at conferences as well. One of these things that I've enjoyed a lot in some conferences I've been to recently is the opportunity to virtually sign up for one-on-one meetings. So yeah. There'll be like a list of all of the people who are at this conference, and, you know, they can create profiles that say like, here's the things I'm interested in, here's what I want to know. And then you can sign up and have one-on-one meetings, like 15-minute meetings, right? And those are structured really nicely so that you know, show up at the room and at the table, and then the other person shows up and they sit down and you talk for 15 minutes. And, you know, if it's a love connection, great. And if it's not,
kind of
like
speed dating a little
bit.
It
is.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. And like, there's nothing wrong with that. You get to learn about some interesting things people are doing. And it takes that, like, scary group element out of it. And it takes that scary, like, I have to approach this person piece of things out of it. And so it makes it much more like structured in a way that I at least find really appealing. And so I've really appreciated when conferences are making that effort to do those like scheduling one-on-one conversations, because it just makes it so much better.
No, it is so helpful. And I am, as one of my colleagues referred to me at this conference, an introvert's introvert. So it's the best for that, because yeah. I had at this last conference I went to, they did offer that. I had 9 meetings. Mm-hmm. And they were great. And I did not feel drained. And I wasn't constantly in these like large group, small talk, networking, you know, the things that just make introverts crazy. Mm-hmm. And I can do them, but they just are exhausting. And so it's really fun to be able to meet with these one-on-one and have these connections. So Sarah, here's something I want to bring up. When you are doing this in-person marketing, and I think, let me think of a situation that would fit kind of your context. So let's say you're going to a speaking engagement. Mm-hmm. And there are people in the audience who might want to hire you based on what you do. This is like your trial run for them. When you're at that thing as the speaker, you're on like the entire time. You're marketing yourself the entire time. It's not just when you're talking with an individual person. People are watching you. Like you have something that you're trying to uphold in terms of professionalism, in terms of your brand, in terms of just everything. How are you handling that when you're in these situations when it's like people know who you are? Like, you know, if you're the speaker, everybody knows, you know, like once you've spoken, you were on stage, everybody knows who you are. You know, like you're then kind of required in some ways to be performing the rest of the time you're at that event, so that you're not like, for lack of a better word, like letting people down in terms of like, you know, who you are or what you represent.
Yeah. That's an interesting question. And this is going to sound silly, but it's one of those things I haven't really considered in that way. And now I'm like, should I have? Thank you for creating anxiety. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. That's like my job on this podcast is to create anxiety for Sarah.
No, I think for me, it's sort of like I step up my personality a little bit, right? That's how I feel about my speaking, is that I have worked so hard to make it feel natural to me that when I am speaking, like, yes, I'm on, but honestly, it doesn't feel like any more of a performance energy issue than doing these podcasts, right? Like, I'm excitedly talking about a thing I care about, and my excitement just sort of bubbles out of me. Like, I can't not be excited about stuff when I'm excited about it. So I think for me, you know, there have been times, of course, where my energy is really low, or I've had like major life crisis happen and I have to go give a presentation anyway. But I find that if I can get into the moment of the excitement and of kind of actually like feeding on the energy of the audience a little bit, finding those people who are clearly engaged and sort of engaging with them to kind of get their energy going, I find that that sort of cyclical energy well, for lack of a better term, really helps me stay in that place. And then afterwards, usually it's, you know, people are coming up and asking questions, or, you know, I'm in the lunch line getting something and somebody wants to have a conversation. And I genuinely find people fascinating. And so I kind of go to that place a little bit of like, oh, I'm the qualitative researcher who wants to hear more about your life, right? Like, tell me more about that. And so I can kind of shift from presenter all about me and my stuff mode to qualitative researcher, tell me more about yourself, I'm really interested. And so I guess like having those different, I don't want to call them personas, because they're just elements of me. And so I can kind of shift from those different pieces depending on what's needed in the situation, right? Sometimes I need to go back into presenter mode when somebody asks me a tough question and I have to kind of, you know, figure out what answer I'm going to come up with. But other times it's just listening to people. And like, I enjoy that generally. And so I guess I don't necessarily feel like the rest of the time I'm even on. It's just, it's a slightly, maybe a slightly like step down level of my personality when I'm not on stage. But I can easily kind of step back into that if I need to. So it doesn't, I don't know. I guess I don't necessarily think of it that way. Interestingly.
Okay. So I'm going to take us on a slight tangent, but I promise it connects. Do you know about Enneagram? I've heard the personality test.
I've heard the term, but I don't.
You don't know your number.
I don't know my number. No.
Okay. So I got a couple books about this the other day, and I posted on social about it, and people were like, well, what's your number? And I was like, I don't know. I have to go find out. So I went online and, like, I didn't take a quiz, but I, like, read through all the different numbers.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'm a 3.
Which is?
Well, it's the person who's really performative. It's the person who's, like, feeling like they need to be on. Like, it's a performance, and you're very concerned with kind of what other people think and, like, you know, that kind of thing. Which I don't think I'm overly concerned about that, but I definitely, you know, when you're describing how you are in these situations, I am definitely more on than what you're talking about. And it could be the introvert thing where I'm just like, I need to give concerted energy to it, or I will be a lump in the corner. But yeah, so it's I'm thinking about that as you're kind of describing this. And yeah, the Enneagram thing is interesting. Just as a quick side note, I don't know what I really think about it. But it's those kind of things are always interesting because they get you thinking about yourself and whether you agree or disagree with whatever the thing is you're supposed to be.
Well, and as I'm reflecting here, I'm thinking, like, I also have a lot of, frankly, practice and training in presentations, and not in the sense of, like, I've given a lot of presentations, though that is part of it. But when I was a kid, I was singing solos in front of church when I was, like, 7 years old, right? Like, this was just a thing I did. And it was never about the, like, look at me, because I would always go hide in the women's restroom afterwards because I didn't want to talk to anybody because that part was terrible. but I've never had a problem getting in front of a crowd. That's never been an issue for me. And then over the course of my schooling, I was either in music or in theater or, you know, playing on the basketball court. Like, there were performative elements of my life that have existed from the very beginning. And so I've gotten very used to being in that space of having to put energy into something, but also figuring out where I'm going to find it from in those moments. Now, all of that said, I am totally an introvert. And so at the end of the day of a big presentation like that, I'm, like, crashing hard on the way home. But when I need it in the moment, I don't ever really have trouble finding it. And whether that's, again, looking for somebody in the audience who's really engaged, or, you know, kind of pulling it out of my own inner passion and excitement for the work I'm talking about or whatever it is, I don't have as much problem with that. And again, I think a lot of that is just practice. So, you know, maybe thinking about those experiences you've had in your life where you've had to do that before. So if you struggle with this kind of, like, oh, I feel like I'm on all the time, you know, where can you look for energy in the moment? And whether that's energy in the other person's excitement about something and kind of asking them about what is that, you know, what's that like for you or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. That's just something that occurs to me as we're talking here.
Let's psychoanalyze this a little bit even more. Because I would say it's not about finding the energy. Like, that's not a problem for me. And similar to you, I don't mind being in front of crowds. So it's not really about that. It is draining because of the introvert thing. I would say it's more, I feel a sense of responsibility and obligation that what people hear on the podcast or what they envision of me is what they will get in the moment. And I know, based on how people talk to me via email and other things, that they have certain perceptions of me that are not necessarily what I'm intending to put out there.
Right.
So, for example, at this conference, I met with someone and he opened with, "You are a guru."
You're like, thank you for labeling me.
Or some people walk up and they're like, "You are my hero." You know, like, they will say things like that to me.
Yeah.
And I will, you know, so I know that there is kind of a bigger than me image that is going out, not completely in my control. And I think it has a lot to do with productivity. You know, people just see me doing a lot of stuff and they don't quite know how it's happening. And I get asked if I have a team and, you know, those kinds of things. So that's really, I think, what I'm talking about here is this kind of larger, and I can't control for that all the time.
Right.
And I'm not walking around dressing like a guru or whatever, you know, like
whatever that
I don't even know how to look like a guru. Like, I don't know what this entails exactly.
Yeah.
But it does mean that there's always, like, so for example, if I'm in an airport and I'm in a stressful situation, I still need to keep my cool because it's possible that someone there will know me. And I'm not going to be, you know, that jerk in the airport. You know, like I do feel this sense of like I am not off until I am in a private space where I'm either by myself or with my partner. Because of how, you know, I don't know, like part of it is just politeness and professionalism and, you know, all of that. But I do feel kind of this, and this is, I think, my number three. Like, I do feel this sense of when I'm at a conference and I'm in those networking situations, people are expecting me to act in a certain way. They're expecting me to be polite. They're expecting me to be welcoming, like, because those are the kinds of things I am on the podcast. And it's just a certain level of pressure. Because we're all human and we all have moments where we're not at our best and, you know, we're tired or whatever, you know, like we get impatient or, you know, but I think that those are things that I try to keep really private. And so my public persona is not that.
So can I ask a potentially hard question?
Totally. Bring it.
Which is, do you feel like when you're in those situations, you're not allowed to have a hard time?
I would say that my brand is not built around me having a hard time.
So you feel like you have to inhabit your brand in those places rather than your own self in some ways. And not that you're not yourself, but like it's a different.
There are certain things that I'm definitely curating.
Yeah.
In those moments where, you know, I am, I'm in a public place where people know who I am. And and part of it too is like, to be honest, we live in a judgmental world. Like, I mean, it's just like people will, you know, higher ed is a very small world and there's all kinds of gossipy crap that goes on. And like, I don't want to be adding any fuel to that fire. So part of it is definitely that. But I would also say, you know, and we've talked about this before on the show, although I can't pinpoint a specific episode in my mind, but this idea of what it means to be authentic and genuine. Having boundaries is different than not being authentic. And so I would put this in the category of I have certain boundaries that, you know, if somebody comes up and they interact with me in a way that in my head, I'm like, wow, this is, you know, this is real. This is a story to tell my partner later. You know, like this is, I'm not necessarily going to, I'm going to tell my partner different things about that scenario than how I acted in the moment. You know, if that makes sense, like I'm just going to have a different read of that kind of thing. And I don't know, like, I mean, hopefully our listeners are not thinking like, wow, what a fake, you know, like, I don't think it's about that. I think it's, for me, it's about, you know, and when we've talked about this before in terms of brand, and I guess the other thing I want to be kind of clear about is I don't feel this as a hardship. So it's not like I have these like honest moments that I really want to let out. And I'm like, you know, hanging on by my fingernails to like not let this stuff out. Like, no, this is just who I am. Like, this is who I am in a public way. And so this is how you're going to interact with me in a public way. And how I interact with my family or my partner is going to look different because I have boundaries around that. So, yeah, it's not difficult. And it doesn't, I mean, yes, it takes some energy because anytime you're in a performative space, you have to kind of think about that. But it is the same that you mentioned, Sarah, and that like I turn up the volume a little bit. You know, like you see me a little more perky. And it's interesting because when my family has been with me in those moments, like my partner or like one of my sisters noticed it one time and they were like, whoa, okay.
That's different.
I mean, it's visibly different. Like when I when I turn it on and I'm interacting with someone and I'm giving them my full attention and like really listening and like, you know, like that is part of that. I mean, like that's part of that situation is like when I'm giving you that, I want you to feel it. I want you to see that I'm engaged. And so it gets boosted.
It gets amped up a little bit. That's really, that's all really interesting. I think one of the things that, the last year made me grapple with a little bit was where are those personal boundaries in a professional context? So there were several times last year where I had to give a presentation in front of a room full of, you know, anywhere between 60 and several hundred people, mere days after first losing my dog Bingley and secondly after losing my father-in-law. So like I was in the, you know, throes of grief and yet still having to go and do this thing because I had contracted to do it and whatever. And I found that for me, it was actually much more comfortable to just kind of say that at the beginning of the presentation and be really honest with the organizers about it. Like, hey, this is where I am today. Like, just so you know, this thing, you know, that I just lost somebody really significant in my life and I'm kind of reeling from it, but like, I'm going to do the best I can today and we're going to have hopefully a really great conversation, but like, I want you to know where I am so that you can not even necessarily adjust your expectations, but like, see me as a human, right? Like, I am going through something right now, mm-hmm. or I am dealing with this. And I realize, Katie, that what you're talking about is a little different than that. But I think one of the things for our listeners to think about is where do you sit on that spectrum of wanting to be authentic and wanting your brand to be authentic, but where are your boundaries there and what does that look like? Like, those are tough questions, and I think they get constantly negotiated and renegotiated based on the situation and based on your history and all of those kinds of things. But I guess I would encourage listeners to kind of ponder that a little bit. Like, when you're in this kind of on and marketing kind of space, what, you know, where are your boundaries there? And they don't have to be the same in every place, and they don't have to be the same as everybody else's. But being thoughtful about how honest do you want to be, and you know, who deserves that honesty and who doesn't, and those kinds of things, like all of these mm-hmm. kinds of questions, I think come up in this conversation. So I'm glad we're having it, Katie, because
they're really good questions. Well, and when you're describing that, Sarah, of what you would disclose, I would never do that.
Yeah.
Ever. Like, I just would never share that kind of information. And part of it is because for me, I think that you and I feel very differently about this. Personally, I would feel like I was letting myself off the hook.
Oh, interesting.
And that I was telling them that so that if it didn't go well, I had an excuse. And so if I don't tell them that, there's no excuse for this not to go well. And
interesting.
And so that's part of it for me. I mean, I can definitely like pull that out of why I don't do that. But also I would say that if I'm making the choice to be somewhere, I want them to get everything anyone else would get.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I can't go and I have to pull out or whatever, then I will pull out. But I think that, you know, in those situations, the other thing that I think this really comes down to for me is privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so back to the boundaries kind of question, there are things that if they're going on in my life mm-hmm. and they're negative in particular, they're private.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just will not share them with anyone outside of my small circle of people who, you know, need to know things. And sometimes that circle is incredibly small. Sometimes it's my partner and that's it. Like that, there's a vault, you know, like mm-hmm. it does not go anywhere. And I think that for me, part of that is like, I need a private space because I am so public about mm-hmm. other things, that it also doesn't feel like, it feels protective more than it feels like I'm not representing something in an honest way.
Sure, sure.
It's like I need to save some things for me because I'm sharing out so many other things,
mm-hmm.
you know, in various mediums. And so, yeah, like it just, it's interesting because as we're talking about this, I just have no qualms about it. Like, I'm just like, this is how I am. These are my boundaries. Like, you're going to get some stuff and you're not going to get other stuff. And like, you know, should realize that. And I think too, people can tell who are in kind of a closer circle with me when you're getting honesty is not the right word. When you're getting mm-hmm. kind of the full picture mm-hmm. of what I'm dealing with versus like a version or a slice of my, you know, a smaller part of my life. So anyway, I mean, I think that that's something, you know, I agree with you that our listeners should kind of ask themselves those questions and not be apologetic about it. Like, if you have boundaries and you're acting a certain way in public, you know, the question I would ask is, does it feel aligned for you with who you are and what you want to represent? And how I represent myself feels completely aligned. Like, mm-hmm. there is not dishonesty in anything that I'm putting out there. It's just a slice
mm-hmm.
of a larger pie.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would say the same is true for me, right? Like, I'm not necessarily, you know, broadcasting when I'm having a terrible day because I had a fight with a friend or whatever, right? Like that's not necessary information for people to have. But I also, you know, my brand is more built around this idea of honesty and what does that mean and how do you do that in a way that is unapologetic, but also not making an excuse, right? Like, so there is that kind of double-edged sword there, as you mentioned.
You share the real stuff. Like, this is part of your brand. Part of your brand is sharing hard things.
Right.
Yeah, like, my brand is not about sharing those same hard things.
Right, right. So it's just interesting to reflect on that and how that manifests in some of these in-person situations, too. And like you said, Katie, I think listeners, if when you are thinking about these in-person situations, figuring out that alignment piece, like, where are you most comfortable? Where are you most aligned to your values and your mission and, you know, your business? Then it will come more easily. I mean, a lot of this stuff that we're talking about, like, around, you know, I don't want it to feel like bragging or whatever. The more you're able to kind of live into the identity that you're presenting, the easier that becomes. And whether that's a sort of unique brand that is kind of distanced from your personal experience of the world, or whether it is connected, I think there are ways to do it that will feel authentic. So it's finding that space of alignment is I think really where we're coming to as our little nugget for this episode.
Yeah, well, and I think I love that idea of, like, it's not bragging if it's just what you do.
Right.
You know, like, right. And I think the more your brand speaks to that, mm-hmm. the more, like we were talking about earlier, it kind of goes before you and sets up people's expectations of what they can expect.
Yep.
And that, to me, is always a relief. When I walk into a space and people already know that I do certain things, then it's like, oh, great. Like, that's just like, I don't have to worry about that. And if they have questions or whatever, like, we can take the conversation basically to a different level.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the other thing that I think is kind of interesting, Sarah, that about our ways that we deal with this. A lot of my services are really based on this idea of me focusing on the client, whether mm-hmm. it's like a group coaching thing or especially with my private coaching practice. And in a lot of coaching, you don't know very much about your coach. And we've talked about this mm-hmm. before, that people know a little more about me because of, you know, podcasting and whatever. This is another reason, though, that I think I've been kind of careful about this with my brand and my more public persona, is that I don't want people to be distracted.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed, for example, if I release on the podcast or something that I've been sick, like when I was really sick over the summer and I had to take a week off of work and I took a week off the podcast, and like, it was a thing. Like, I mm-hmm. basically had a doctor's note and they were like, do not do anything for a week. And that is mm-hmm. incredibly rare for that to happen. I had a lot of people reaching out to me about that and commenting mm-hmm. on social and asking how I was and emailing. Mm-hmm. And like, they were very concerned. And that was very kind and nice of them. But it was a nice reminder to me that when I share those kinds of things, yes, it's nice to have that connection, mm-hmm. but it also is kind of distracting for people. And mm. and they put their energy into like concern or worry or kindness
mm-hmm.
when in some of those relationships, I don't want the focus to be on me.
Mm.
Like, that's not where their energy should be going.
Mm-hmm.
So if they know that I'm dealing with something that's hard, yes, there's the possibility for them to connect with me over that, but that's not the goal of coaching.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it is kind of interesting. And I think about the Honestly series in particular, when you are trying to connect with people in a very clear way, you're trying to help people share about stuff that's going on with them, connect with stuff that's going on with you, use your experience to kind of elicit reflection on their part. And I do that with podcasting. But in other situations, I'm very careful not to do that because mm-hmm. it's not my role and it's not mm-hmm. what I want my clients to get into a habit of, like, applying my situation to their life.
Mm-hmm.
That's not ideal at all. Like, that's the opposite of what I would want.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. So really, we're also throwing another wrench into this, which is, what type of work are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, it has a lot to do with that.
Yeah,
it has a lot to do with that. And how much you're trying to be seen and known by your audience in a particular way,
mm-hmm.
and what the ultimate goal of your work is. Like, I use personal anecdotes, but I'm really mm-hmm. careful about which ones I use.
Yep.
So anyway, I think that's a really interesting thing to consider as well for our listeners, that depending on what you're trying to do and what your ultimate goal is, your boundaries and your privacy and what you might do when you're in person with someone, there should be a consistency there, you know, mm-hmm. between, we talk about this with online presence too. Like, if your website should not be drastically different than who you are in person.
Yeah.
Right. But I also think that you can set that up in a way that feels connected to what your ultimate goal is and to right. what you're trying to get your clients to shift toward in your business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would agree. Interesting that we've kind of come around to this, this again, this sort of like personal professional boundary thing, but I think it is something that you have to negotiate almost all the time when you're doing this yeah. kind of work. And so it's bound to come up repeatedly as we talk about these kinds of things, especially marketing, because especially when you are your brand, you are marketing you. And that's a weird thing too. Like, yeah. So thinking about where those boundaries are and how they apply, and also where is that alignment and that authenticity, and what does that mean for you? Those are all crucial questions as we're thinking about these kinds of, you know, marketing issues more broadly, as well as the in-person side.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's helpful. Hopefully, I hope it's helpful for our listeners to hear that you can be intentional about this
mm-hmm.
and it's not inauthentic or
Correct.
Dishonest
Correct.
To set boundaries.
Yep.
And I think that you and I both have boundaries in different
mm-hmm.
ways.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad we can share different examples of what that looks like. That's mm-hmm. actually one of my favorite things about the differences in our businesses
mm-hmm.
is how that comes out, you
yeah.
know, like how we share in different ways, because they're both successful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the thing, like you can do this in so many different ways, but you have to do it on your own terms in the way that feels good to
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that feels like a perfect ending nugget.
Way to psychoanalyze me on this one, Sarah.
Hey!
Now I need to know your Enneagram number.
Something. Yeah,
I know. So this is a thing. Now I'm officially saying in season 5, you need to find out your Enneagram number and share
it
at some point.
Figure it out. All right.
There's a quiz. I don't think it's that complicated.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But we should think about this, because I don't know. It's the same with like Myers-Briggs or whatever else.
Right.
Like, I do think it's useful to just yeah. kind of know what are these categories.
That's why. Yeah.
But yeah, the Enneagram thing is, it's interesting.
An interesting thing.
All right. Well, Sarah, as always, so fascinating to talk with you. And to our listeners, you can always connect with us. We love to get questions. If you want to tell us your Enneagram number, we would love to hear it. Or tell me if you think I'm a 3 or not based on what I described, because I'm sure some of you really know what this is way better than I do. Literally, this was like a 6 a.m. internet search to try to figure out what I was, because somebody asked me on Instagram and I didn't know. So you can contact us via email by emailing contact@katielinder.work. You can connect with Sarah on Instagram or Twitter as @DrLangworthy. That's Dr. Langworthy. You can also connect with me on Twitter at @Katie_Linder or on Instagram at @Katie_Linder. And we love to hear from you in any capacity. So
yeah.
Thanks everyone for checking out this episode, and we will be back with more on marketing in your ears soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Make Your Way. Show notes and a transcript for this episode can be found at katielinder.work/podcasts. Make Your Way is part of the Radical Self-Trust podcast channel, a collection of content dedicated to helping you seek self-knowledge, nurture your superpowers, playfully experiment, live your core values with intention, practice loving kindness toward yourself and others, and settle into your life's purpose. Learn more about the RST channel at katielinder.work/podcasts. If you found this episode helpful, please also consider rating and/or reviewing the show in iTunes. Thanks for listening.